sister, Kelsey, and two of my friends from youth group, Ethan and Bryce, were all given an opportunity to travel out to Arizona to the Navajo Reservation. We were incredibly excited and grateful, but honestly, none of us had any idea of what to expect when we hopped on the plane for 4 hours and eventually landed in Phoenix. Through those 10 days, I felt my faith become so much stronger and become more of a priority in my life. I was inspired by the kids and people I was surrounded by, and my eyes were opened to a culture within our own country that is so often overlooked. This time, however, I did have an idea of what was going to happen, and I was hoping I would recognize some of the amazing children I had met 2 years back.
Actually, that picture in the top,
in the center, I drew that of one of the kids who I had met, and I actually saw her this time, and it was really cool. But to make our flight this time, we had to leave for Detroit around 2:30 a.m. So naturally, I pulled an all-nighter to avoid oversleeping, which was not my best decision. But Aaron, a guy who I had known on the previous trip, picked us up, Abe and me, and one of the first things he said was, "Don't expect this trip to be anything like the last one." And he was very right for a variety of reasons, one of which I had already known. This time, it was just Abe and I. There was no Kelsey or Ethan or Bryce that were able to go along this time, and I no longer had a building group of friends, which made me somewhat anxious because I have a hard time making friends sometimes. And so I knew I was really going to have to put myself out there to make the most of this experience. But that's what I had wanted to do. I wanted to make the most of this mission trip. And I think there were three main goals that I had going into this for my second time. I wanted to be able to develop relationships with the children who came to DBS and help them to develop a relationship with God. I wanted to further my own relationship with God, and I wanted to learn more about their culture and their lives. Upon arriving to the mission, we started helping to unload food and supplies for the week and were sent to our apartments. In mine, there were 8 girls, and we all decided to explore the mission. The mission is always changing and becoming better than the last time because there are so many different groups who come in to do work projects and help it out. So even for those of us who had been there before, it was definitely very interesting. Since we had been there, new air conditioning was put in place, which was fantastic. Because the temperature was over 100 degrees every day. There was also a new computer lab, and the leader of the mission, who lives there year-round, explained that they had received a federal grant to put the computers in. It was a very nice facility, especially for people who don't have a lot of access to technology at all. He also said that a lot of the kids are way more advanced than the adults. A lot of the adults don't know how to use technology at all, and so they always go to their kids for help with the technology. Many of the adults don't want to use them at all. There's a huge generation gap in the Navajo culture, partly because of the technology. Most of you know the importance of the Navajo language during World War II because it was an unwritten language. It was impossible for the Germans to decode the messages, which gave the Allies a huge advantage. But unfortunately, many of the children don't know the language anymore. They're starting to speak English, which is a concern among the older Navajo people because they're losing a part of their culture, and they're becoming less able to communicate with their grandchildren, because many of the elderly don't speak English at all, and many of the children don't speak Navajo at all. Navajo culture is very symbolic, and all of their traditions and practices have a higher meaning. Every time a group visits the mission, we do work projects to improve it. This time, we had built a fence for the play area and built systems to help with flooding, because when they receive rain, it does the soap. The ground doesn't soak it up very well. And then the group who had come before us had actually cleaned up half of the cemetery. So we were tasked with finishing the other half and repainting the gate and some of the crosses which marked the graves. Not going to sugarcoat it, the cemetery was in rough shape. The group of us who had come to the cemetery were given, you know, shovels, rakes, hoes, clippers, and all these types of tools. And basically anything that could dig up large, spiky plants with widespread roots. And after about, like, 5 hours of digging up plants and picking up cow poop and painting grave markers in a gate, in the sweltering heat, with no shade, we were finally finished. We even encountered a couple of scorpions, which was fun. I think all of us wondered how the people let it get this bad, especially for a community that's so respectful of their elderly and deceased. How could they seemingly neglect it like that? And it wasn't really that they were neglecting their people, though. They were letting them pass on to the next life. In Navajo culture, once a person dies, there's no going back and dwelling on the dead, because they want their spirit to be able to pass on, because it doesn't return. So the newer graves were decorated in beautiful flowers and surrounded by fences to help keep the animals out, but the rest were in terrible shape. They try to keep it so that way animals can't get in, so that way, because they won't return after the funeral, in most cases. The work projects are probably the most challenging part of the trip physically, because we're doing, you know, strenuous work out in the sun with no shade, obviously. I still think that the VBS was the hardest part for us mentally. Obviously, there are some kids who misbehave or just don't listen. There are some older ones who refuse to dance because it's not cool. And there are some little ones who cry because they miss their older brother or sister. And amidst all this, we have the task of helping them to find God, which is overwhelming to say the least. These kids haven't grown up knowing about Jesus or hearing about it at all. How am I supposed to get them to grasp the idea that he's our Savior? How do you help them understand the significance of the cross in 5 short days? The significance of the cross is hard to fathom, even for me. And it's not something you can fully grasp in a number of days, or weeks, or even years. Our job on the mission wasn't to help the kids to understand it. It was to plant the seed in them, in the young ones, and to water it in the older ones. My job was to teach music, which is really just a lot of hand gestures and arm movements to go to songs about Jesus and try to get the kids to mirror us, which is simple enough, but they don't like to follow along necessarily. The theme of VBS this year was Power Lab, so we did a lot of like flexing motions, and it was a challenging station to get the kids to participate in because they find it uncool. And so the biggest thing for me to get them to do this was connecting with them. If you're able to connect with the kids, they're much more open to doing the motions and much more open to listening to the messages of the songs. And usually Abe would briefly explain the messages to the kids so that way they could kind of get it. One of the best times to talk with these kids and really be able to form relationships with them was in the van rides. There were 4 or 5 vans which we used to get from the Phoenix Airport to Rock Point, and we would take these vans around the whole reservation multiple times, going door to door to pick up kids and take them to the mission. I know what it sounds like, large white vans collecting kids from houses, but nevertheless, we did it, and the parents trusted it, so. When you go around, though, you get a taste of what these kids come from, and you learn a lot about them. Many of them loved playing on my phone, especially with the Snapchat filters, such as that one, that, all those, yeah. I was really able to get to know some of the kids this way, though, and they were much more willing to participate since they sort of knew me and felt somewhat comfortable with who I was. Other times, when we were actually in the church, this would mean talking to them individually, and sometimes it would involve dancing with them. And it seemed like any sort of interaction would make them feel special or like it mattered would help them to participate. not always, but most of the time, is simply if we simply show them we cared about their day or their participation, their faces instantly brightened, and they became more willing to participate. I also found that kids were more willing to participate if their friends were dancing. I think this is a behavior that many of us do, especially when it comes to our faith. We only really share about religion when others around us are. When you're surrounded by people who have the same belief system as you, it's much easier to be open about your faith and to practice it. For 10 days, I was in the desert, and I knew my purpose for being there, which was to spread the love of God. My purpose was very clear, and I tried every day to fulfill it as best as I could. I felt my faith grow so much in that short amount of time. But then when I return to everyday life, my purpose becomes muddy again. At school or work or practice or friends party and this and that and the other thing. And then all these commitments just pull your mind in a million different directions. And you're wondering how to make time for everything. And then you forget. Or at least I do. And making time for all the other stuff, which seems so important, at least at the time, I put God aside. And really, he should be one of my main priorities. Or my main priority. Then on Sunday, I remember again and devote a small period of time to him. But come Monday, it's the same story all over again. And many of us experience this. How can we break this cycle? We can't. We can't really break this cycle or stop it because we can't drop everything. We have to alter the cycle and make space for God in our routine. Whether that's at the end of the day or beginning or somewhere in between, we have to take a moment to remember him. Every time this mission trip happens, there's a theme and a song that is revealed throughout the course of 10 days in the talks during worship each night. The talks are all based on lyrics from the song, each one a lesson of its own, but together they form one overarching theme. These were the lyrics that we talked about this time. Day 1, breathe. Day 2, you call me out upon the waters. Day 3, in oceans deep, my faith will stand. Day 4, I will call upon your name and keep my eyes above the waves. Day 5, your sovereign hand will be my guide. Day 6, where feet may fail and fear surrounds me, you've never failed and you won't start now. Day 7, Spirit, lead me where my trust is without borders. Day 8, let me walk upon the waters wherever you would call me. And day 9, take me deeper than my faith could ever wander, and my faith will be made stronger. The song was Oceans, and the lesson was that life is hard and troubles arise, but in our deepest struggles, God is there to guide us. We should have faith, not fear. And when God calls us to do something, we should do it without a shadow of a doubt. And that will make us stronger. So here's a song.